Welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Roberta King, a Vice President and Branch Leader with Fidelity Investments, and with me today is Tony Zhang, Chief Strategist of Options Play. Tony is a frequent CNBC guest. Tony, welcome. It's good to be back with you.
Thank you so much, Roberta. We're at a pretty pivotal juncture here of the equity market. So really excited to dissect, what we're currently looking at and what our outlook is based on that.
I agree. So today is Thursday, February 20th, 2025, and it has been another busy news week. And so if you've been listening, it's been full of tariff talks, inflation views, and of course, policy discussion. So Tony, let's go ahead and get in today's conversation and let's start with your macroeconomic view of the markets. Can you just start by sharing with us what you're observing?
Yeah, absolutely, Roberta. If you look at the US equity markets, if you look at the S&P 500, you look at the NASDAQ 100, both of those indices are effectively at all-time highs. And I think the question on almost every investor's mind at the moment is, do we break out from here and start a new bullish trend, or do we fail at these levels and trade back into the trading range that we largely have been in since the end of November? So, there's a few different perspectives that we can look at this from. The first one, I think, is from a sentiment perspective. If you look at the fact that the VIX is currently trading around 16% with the S&P at all-time highs, that's unusual. That's unusually high reading on the VIX for the S&P at all-time highs. If you look at the AAII sentiment survey this particular week, 47% of survey respondents said that they have a bearish sentiment here of the overall bear of the overall markets. And that's also unusually high given the fact that we are effectively at all-time highs. That's the highest level we've seen since November 2023. Now, here's the thing about these types of bearish sentiment surveys is that they're traditionally a contrarian signal, meaning when investors are overly bearish, that tends to precede market bottoms or market corrections. So that's one thing to potentially look at is that, there's a lot of pessimism in the market, there's a lot of fear in the markets, and as we're at all-time highs, that fear could turn around into optimism and actually be the catalyst that drives the market higher. However, when you look at it from a different perspective, you look at the bond markets, they're signaling something that is, I think, far more concerning for it should be far more concerning for investors, which is really inflation. If you look at the 2-year break-even yields right now, it exceeds the CPI, the latest CPI print of 3%. And that's suggesting that the bond market is concerned about inflation re-accelerating to the upside. We've seen inflation come in hotter than expected for the past couple of prints. And this is the bond market signal to say there's concern that there could be further worsening of inflation, which is going to continue to shift, our expectations for rate cuts. We've already went from, at the end of last year, expecting 2 rate cuts for 2025. Now we're only expecting 1 rate cut, and so coming in somewhere around September, October, is that going to change even further? The Chairman Powell has been pretty clear in terms of his testimony of keeping interest rates where they are for the foreseeable future, given where inflation is currently standing and employment. But that's really kind of, from my perspective, the biggest risk is that higher rates is going to have effects on corporate earnings. It's going to have effect on government debt, consumer spending, all of these things that are pretty important variables into the strength of the US economy. So if you look at the potential for this breakout here on the S&P above 6130, the concern that I have here is that we might see perhaps a false breakout, a breakout higher here that simply fails to hold and reverts back lower. That's going to be my base case here at the moment. Right now, we simply lack any catalyst that could push this market higher. We've already largely passed the earnings season. But with Fed holding rates steady here, I think that in the short run can limit the upside here for equities at these all-time high levels.
Thank you for your viewpoint, Tony. And so I'm thinking on the other side of that when you're talking about having a breakout. And I'm curious to know what factors could or would drive a potential breakout that would be sustained.
Yeah, so like I said, since we're already past the earnings season, we're sort of short on catalysts. The main, I would say, short-term catalyst that could propel us higher here really is part of what's driving the uncertainty right now, which is around tariffs and inflation, right? And largely, you could say that tariffs is kind of the input into some of the concerns around inflation. Now, unfortunately, we're sort of still in the cycle, very early in the stages of a new presidential cycle. So it's likely that we're going to see more tariffs, or at least rhetoric around tariffs being introduced in the short run rather than a reduction. However, since you asked the question, I would say, if there is any progress made in terms of talks with the US and some of the major nations that President Trump so far has talked about in instilling tariffs on, if there's any reduction in those tariffs or if there's any progress made in terms of talks that would reduce those tariffs in the future, I think that could be, in the short run, one of the primary catalysts that could drive markets higher. Because obviously, reduction in tariffs also would translate to potentially reduction in inflation. That would translate into changes in terms of rate cut expectations. So that would be the primary driver that I think could move markets higher. If you look a little bit more higher, longer term from into the medium term, guidance for companies in 2025 has been lowered substantially here. A lot of CEOs have been more cautious based on the tone of their guidance that they provided for 2025. And that simply puts us at a lower bar for these companies to meet over the next couple of quarters. So I do think that earnings will likely catch up a little bit here in the next couple of quarters and perhaps produce better than average results. And that could be a medium-term catalyst. But those are the two primary things that I'll be looking at in 2025 that could drive markets higher and spark the next rally.
Thank you for that conversation and perspective, Tony. I appreciate it. So let's shift a little bit and really look at the tactical application of what you're observing and the overall market, and then what we can potentially as traders do about it. So what trade are you sharing with us today, so that you're seeking to find opportunity in the market with?
Yeah, Roberta. So the trade that I want to take a look at is one that largely aligns with my macro view at the moment, near these all-time highs. And it's a company that we've spoken about quite a bit over the last 6 months or so, which is Apple. Because I think that Apple continues to face multiple challenges on multiple fronts. That is a bit concerning, especially as as markets reach these all-time highs and is at risk of potentially pulling back here. If you look at Apple, I think probably the biggest driver here of concern is really around iPhone 16 sales. They've continued to disappoint in terms of sales numbers, which is pointing to, or showing us kind of a much more selective consumer. And this is as a result of higher inflation, higher interest rates, and just credit card debt that continues to rack up here. Consumers need to be more selective here right now, and it's showing up in places like iPhone 16 sales. You also have, if you look at the future for Apple, Vision Pro. They spent over 10 years and $100 billion on what they are deeming as the future of Apple with AR. And Vision Pro faces some pretty stiff competition from Meta and Snapchat. And I think this is going to put a lot of pressure here on Apple's augmented reality strategy and whether or not they're actually going to be able to execute on their vision the way that they want to and be a leader in this particular space rather than perhaps being a follower in this particular space. But one specific area that I think is largely important for investors right now, where Apple is a laggard, is in the AI space. They've talked up AI and Apple Intelligence in the iPhone 16 for many, many months now, but largely, those features have not really been released, and we don't really know when those features are going to be released and what pace. So it's failing to match industry leaders, and they're very much not setting the trends here. And I think that's a big issue here for Apple to be lagging behind and not using their own technology on an AI perspective. And then lastly, just the slowdown in China's economy is weighing on sales. We've seen a key market here for Apple being turning Apple into a loser in China with regards to market share. And that's a big problem. So I think when you look at that, all of these things as a whole, the valuation that Apple continues to command at the moment makes less and less sense. It trades at 33 times forward earnings, which is a 65% premium over the industry. That's a substantial premium. Now, historically, Apple has justified that premium because of the substantial growth that it's been able to generate, the profitability that it's been able to generate. But we've seen multiple quarters now of revenue declines. You know, at the moment, EPS is expected to grow in line with the industry of about 11%. Revenues are expected to grow in line with the industry and the S&P 500 at about 6%. The only thing that Apple really has going for it is profit margins. Net margins of 24% is higher than the industry, and that does justify a premium valuation, but does that justify a 65% premium valuation? I find that very, very hard to justify and wrap my head around, especially when you look at kind of the challenges and the outlook that I currently have here for Apple. And if you look at the stock itself, it's underperformed the S&P 500 since that December top. And just as it reached all-time highs back in December and is recently making lower highs and lower lows and underperforming the S&P 500, those are not particularly great signals here for the particular stock. And that's why I think right now I'm at the very least going to take a more neutral to bearish stance here on Apple, given the valuations that it trades at and just the general outlook and concerns and headwinds that I see Apple's facing here in the short run and in the long run. So the trade structure that I think that makes sense for options traders here is to be a seller of premium that allows you to effectively take a neutral or bearish outlook here on Apple. So in either scenario, if Apple moves lower or if it just stays put, you can be profitable with this type of strategy. I'm going to go out to the April 4th weekly expiration, and I'm selling the 245-260 call vertical. Earlier today, you can collect about $5.80 for that credit spread. And this is a spread that effectively gives you a maximum reward of $580 per contract with a maximum risk of $920 per contract. And that's only if Apple is above 260 at expiration. So we're talking about if that only happens if Apple effectively prints a new all-time high from where we are today. I think the probability of that is relatively low given what we're seeing from the stock and also from a macro perspective. And if Apple simply stays put or moves lower, you can make up to $580 per contract with this type of trade structure.
Thanks so much for sharing this trade. So I do have a couple of questions for you, Tony. My first one is around the concept that you just shared. You know, this trade is really poised to capture income from the selling of the spread. How do you go about choosing strike prices to capture potentially the maximum amount of income you can and balancing the risk?
That's a really great question. So if you think about a call spread that I'm using here, I think we can break it down into what we call the strategy driver and then the secondary part of this. So I'll kind of break it down. So I'm selling the 245 strike and I'm buying the 260 strike. The reason I'm selling the 245 strike is because that is the at the money strike price. So when you're selling the at the money strike price, that's when you're going to maximize the amount of income that you can collect from this type of strategy. So that's why I've chosen the 425 strike. Now, if I was to just, I'm sorry, the 245 strike, if I were to sell just the 245 strike price, you know, what that's going to do is that's going to have unlimited risk. And that's why I don't want to just outright naked sell the 245 strike, because if I did that, number one, I would need a substantial amount of margin in order to sell a naked call option, and I would be taking on unlimited risk. So one way to offset that is to buy a higher strike price. And I'm choosing the 260 strike price because I'm choosing a strike price that's above the all-time highs. Basically, my thesis would have to be invalidated, meaning my view that Apple is facing some headwinds, it's going to potentially pull back, would have to be wrong in that particular case in order for it to exceed that upper strike price. And what that allows me to do by buying that upper strike price is that I'm able to substantially reduce the amount of margin that's required to hold on to this trade. I only need about $920 in margin, the maximum risk of this strategy per contract to sell this call spread, dollars it would require in terms of margin to sell that naked call. And then All at the same time, what I'm doing is I'm reducing my overall risk here down to just $920 versus the unlimited risk that I'm taking if I were just to sell that naked call option. So I'm basically getting a risk profile very similar to the income that I'm receiving if I were to sell that naked 245 call, but I'm doing so in a way that significantly reduces my risk and significantly reduces the amount of capital that's required to get into this trade using the call vertical versus just the naked call.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you. And so, picking back up on that idea of your thesis, and as we all know, they don't always pan out. What we think might happen. Could you share with us, should that happen, should that be the case, and the price is moving up, what would you do to consider managing this trade, if things don't go in the way that you've suggested?
Fantastic question. It's a question that every investor for every strategy you should have a plan for before you get into a trade, which is specifically what should you do if this trade does not go in your favor? You should have a plan before you even get into that trade. So generally speaking, with a credit type strategy like this, the rule of thumb is that if I lose more than 100% of the premium that I could collect on this type of strategy, if I lose that amount, that's usually a good sign that the thesis that I have on the trade is likely not going to work out, certainly not in the time frame that I'm expecting it to work out in. And that's a good reason to cut your losses and move on to the next trade, as opposed to holding on to this trade, hoping that you'd be able to, hoping that the trade will come back and potentially losing the full maximum loss in this trade. So the full maximum loss in this trade is $920. What I'm saying is that if you lose roughly 580, which is the total potential gain on this particular trade, it's time to pull the cord and move on to the next trade. That would save you roughly $300, a little over $300 or so in potential further losses versus if you were to hold it to expiration. Because at that point, once you lose $580, the chances of losing the rest of that, gets substantially higher here. So it's better to kind of cut your losses and move on to the next trade. On the flip side, if the trade does work in your favor, you have a lot of different choices in terms of what you can do. You can close it, you can roll it, and there's really an art to that rather than a science. But when it comes to when the trade's not going in your favor, it's very clear cut, it's very black and white. There's no ifs or buts. You should have a very hard and fast rule as to when you want to close out the trade if it's not working in your favor.
Thank you so much for helping us think strategy on trade management, Tony. So I want to shift gears because we do take time in each of our conversations to look back at a past trade idea and see how things played out. And I personally find these moments where we get to peek back a little bit to, that they provide us some valuable lessons. So today we are looking back on a trade on NVIDIA. Can you share with us what's happened since that initial trade?
Yeah, absolutely. So we sold. So a couple of weeks ago, I laid out a bullish thesis here for NVIDIA. And the underlying thesis is really the fact that the business is very much intact, and that the news out of China's DeepSeek R1 model was a little bit overdone with regards to the market reaction to selling off for NVIDIA. So we took a bullish stance here for NVIDIA. We sold the March 126-114 put vertical here. We collected a little over $5 for that $12 wide credit spread. That credit spread is now trading at $2.25. So I think it's time for us to take profits on that particular trade. And this is part of why I want to start locking in some profits on this particular trade. And I actually believe that this is a trade that you might want to continue to hold on through earnings. But to do so, I think it's better for us to close out the original trade and sell a new credit spread now. So I like to go out to the April 4th. I'm rolling this particular trade out to the April 4th, 138, 124 put vertical here. So basically collecting more premium on this particular trade. I'm effectively recentering the trade based on the current prices for earnings, effectively holding this trade through earnings, but at the same time locking in some of my profits from my first trade. This way, I'm having less total risk on this particular trade because I've locked in some of my profits from the first trade, and this allows me to continue to extend my bullish exposure of NVIDIA through earnings without necessarily holding on to my original trade.
Thanks so much for explaining this one. And this kind of goes back to our earlier conversation around trade management. And so this is a really good example with a successful trade. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you go about making that decision to roll out, the art of it, if you will, and even particularly what strike prices to use the second time around?
Yeah, absolutely. So in this particular case, I've chosen to roll it because I've collected more than 50% of the premium by the original trade. We sold it for 505. We've collected more than half of that premium. So it's time to take profits on that original trade. Now, in terms of rolling it, the reason that I'm rolling it is because I still maintain a bullish exposure. Just because the stock has moved from 126 to 138, I still think there's plenty of upside from a valuation perspective. I think Nvidia still represents a stock that's undervalued at the moment. That's why I'm choosing to roll it rather than just outright closing the trade and taking my profits. So in this particular case, as far as how I choose the strike prices to roll to, well, I use the same philosophy that I used to trade the original strike price, right? So very similar to the Apple trade, I'm selling the at-the-money put option and I'm buying back a lower put in order to offset the overall risk and the capital requirements to sell a put option, but I'm using the same methodologies to select my strike prices every single time when I roll so that I'm maintaining a similar exposure every time I roll on this particular trade. I'm just locking in some profits and basically extending both in time and exposure that I have to the underlying stock.
Thank you so much, Tony, for that reflection and description of your strategy. This does bring us to a close for our show today. And before we wrap up, though, I do want to make note that our show is off next week, but we will resume on Thursday, March 6th. With that, I do want to thank all of our viewers for tuning in today, and a special thank you to Tony for bringing us your trade ideas today.
Thank you so much, Roberta. Thank you so much for having me.
It's always great to see you, Tony. And for our viewers, if you are interested in further details specific to trading, specific to Tony's trade idea shared today, please join us for our midday market briefing, which is tomorrow. And you can do that by visiting fidelity.com/in-the-money follow-up. Also, if you're looking for further insights or if you missed the live show today, be sure to sign up for Active Investor Weekly Newsletter to receive highlights of the trades discussed today. And you can do that by visiting fidelity.com/Active Investor Weekly. With that, I want to say we will see you back in 2 weeks for another episode of In the Money. Take care.
Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options such as spreads, straddles, and collars as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you are most comfortable with. As with all your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of options play and are not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use.
Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments claims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.
Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.